from KQED.
From the Sacramento studio of KQED Public Radio, I'm Dave Iverson. Pelican Bay is a maximum security prison where some inmates spend as much as 22 hours a day in isolation. 2 weeks ago, some 200 of those inmates went on a hunger strike, demanding changes in prison conditions. They were soon joined by over 6,000 inmates at a number of state prisons around the state. The number of hunger strikers has dropped since then, but the strike continues. And in our first half hour, we'll look at the latest California prison dispute. And then in our second half hour, we'll explore what a new study has to say about the need to make improvements for area youth in Sacramento. That's all ahead on Forum after this. From the Sacramento studio of KQED Public Radio, I'm Dave Iverson. For over 500 California prison inmates, today marks day 15 in their hunger strike. The strike began at Pelican Bay, a maximum security prison where some inmates spend almost the entire day in isolation. Inmates there began the strike to protest conditions at the prison, and the strike soon spread to other state prisons, eventually involving over 6,000 inmates, a number which has since declined. The State Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation says the strike spread through organized prison gang networks. We'll hear from a spokesman for the department in a moment, but for some background on the dispute first, we turn to reporter Michael Montgomery, who's covered prison issues for KQED News and California Watch, which is a project of the Center for Investigative Reporting. Michael, good morning.
Good morning.
You've been to Pelican Bay on various reporting assignments a number of times. Just briefly, if you would, describe what that prison is like.
Well, Pelican Bay is situated near the Oregon border in the far north coast near Crescent City. And it's a place that was built, opened in 1989 as essentially California's first and only supermax prison, at least colloquial. That's how it's known. And what we're talking about here is a prison within the prison. There's a general population prison at Pelican Bay for level four inmates. And then there's what's known as the security housing unit, which is where the department sends some of its most dangerous inmates and also inmates who have been confirmed by the department as associates or members of prison gangs. And it's in the security housing unit where the strike began, and the core leaders of the strike are in the security housing unit.
And Michael, what are those security housing units like? Describe what being in one of those situations is like.
It's extremely bleak. There's no other way to say that. There are no windows in the unit. The inmates are in what's called pods, which are individual cells. Usually they're housed alone with, as I said, no windows, really no way to even to see out of the doors themselves for the cells. And then they are allowed out of the cells individually into really what is an exercise pen, which is adjoining these pods, which also doesn't have any windows, isn't really outside. So the point here is that the inmates in the security housing unit never really see the outside world except perhaps a glimpse at the sky. And there's no programming. So they're in their cells virtually all the time, unless they're in the exercise pen or showering. And the department says they do that to keep other inmates and staff and the public safe, that the department insists that these are very dangerous inmates who have earned their way to Pelican Bay.
And we'll hear from a spokesperson for the department in just a moment. But briefly, Michael, again, what are the key demands that these prisoners are putting forward as part of their hunger strike?
Well, we might get into some of the technical details, but the demands amount to issues of the conditions at Pelican Bay, what I've just described, the fact that there's little or no programming that the inmates are allowed to do, and then the issue of why and how inmates are sent into the security housing unit. Just to remind listeners that inmates are sent in the security housing unit from other prisons. They generally don't come in straight from the outside. So it's the real issue here is the issue about gangs and whether an inmate should be sent to the security housing unit purely for gang affiliation. One other thing that I think that we'll go into a little bit later is what's unusual about California is that the inmates are sent into the security housing unit if they're gang affiliated for what's known as indeterminate terms, open-ended. And that's one reason you've had inmates in there for decades, because the terms are indeterminate. So, again, we'll probably go into this later, but California in that sense is not in the national mainstream in terms of the length of time inmates spend in these isolation units.
Michael Montgomery covers prison issues, many other things as well, for California Watch, a project of the Center for Investigative Reporting and KQED News. Late yesterday, I spoke with Terry Thornton, who's a spokesperson for the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitations, and we began by talking about what the current condition was of the prisoners who were on hunger strike.
Well, there have been a handful of cases where inmates were treated for dehydration, but there hasn't been anything more serious than that. The entire demonstration has been peaceful. I do want to stress that there's been no incidents of violence since July 1st. When this thing started, we had about two dozen inmates at Pelican Bay State Prison actually declare they were on a hunger strike. But thousands of inmates in several institutions around the state and one of our contract facilities in another state refused to eat state-issued food. That number peaked to about 6,600 inmates over the 4th of July weekend. And as of July 14th, there are only 537 inmates in five prisons refusing to eat state-issued food.
One of the demands is the end to the isolation units, the secure housing units at Pelican Bay. How are you evaluating that demand?
Well, we received those demands several weeks ago, long before this happened. We've thoroughly evaluated those requests and those demands. The purpose of the security housing unit is to separate dangerous and violent inmates from general population inmates. There are two ways that an inmate can earn placement in the security housing unit. One is if he commits a violent crime while in prison, like murder, extortion, you know, attempted murder, those kinds of things. That will earn that inmate a determinate SHU term, and these offenses that can land the inmate in the SHU
for a crime. SHU referring to the secure housing units.
The security housing unit. That is articulated in state law. The second way that an inmate earns placement in the SHU, and these are for indeterminate SHU terms, is if the inmate is a validated prison gang member or associate. And the goal is to remove prison gangs from general population inmates. These prison gangs, there's a long, long, sad legacy of the tragedy and the crime that they commit both in our institutions and in our communities.
And is it your view as well that those gangs have played a role in spreading the word about this particular action, this hunger strike?
Yes.
And to what evidence do you have that? Do you know how that took place? I mean, if the prisoners are all isolated.
When we ask inmates, okay, why are you not eating? You know, some of them are able to say, well, I'm showing, you know, solidarity or sympathy for the inmates in Pelican Bay State Prison, and some of them are simply saying, I don't know, I was told to.
At this point, then, is there any consideration by your department of modifying or changing in any way the conditions that exist at Pelican Bay, or is it the view of the department that you are going to stay the course regardless of what happens to these particular inmates?
Well, I know that the state is in the middle of major, major criminal justice system reform. Public safety realignment was recently passed and funded in this year's state budget. The department has to reduce its prison population to 137.5% of design capacity within the next 2 years. There are major initiatives going on. And so this is an opportunity for the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation to look at every single aspect. This is going to be a very different state agency. And I think during this whole time of this massive change, frankly, and reform, we're going to be looking at every single aspect of our operations. But I have to tell you, though, that the conditions of confinement for the security housing unit have been litigated numerous times in several lawsuits. There's been court intervention, court monitoring, special master monitoring. There have been legislative hearings. There's oversight by the Office of the Inspector General. There's oversight by other external agencies. There's internal oversight as well, reviews, evaluations. There's media scrutiny, public scrutiny. There is so much scrutiny, not only on the department, but Pelican Bay State Prison as well, that it just would boggle my mind to say, well, how could this be happening with this level of oversight and scrutiny?
So is it fair to say then that while you're considering long-term changes and a number of reforms, in terms of the short-term focus of this, there isn't going to be anything that is changed in terms of the conditions at Pelican Bay, regardless of what the prisoners choose to do. Is that correct?
Now, I wouldn't put it so black and white as that, to be honest. There are some things that are doable. There are some things that we cannot do. For instance, they want an extra day of visiting. I'm sure every inmate in the entire state of California would like an extra day of visiting. I'm sure many members of the public would enjoy that, too. The reality is visiting is on Saturdays and Sundays, and because of budget cuts, we cut visiting on Fridays. But some of the other things like a calendar, a cap, proctoring of exams, those are things that actually may be doable. But I don't know that we're going to be pressured or coerced into doing these things. There are appropriate ways for inmates to bring these concerns to prison officials.
Comments from Terry Thornton, spokesperson for the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. We spoke late yesterday. Joining us now for the rest of our first half hour this morning, again, Michael Montgomery, reporter for KQED Radio News and the California Watch, which is a project of the Center for Investigative Reporting, and Charles Carbone. He is an attorney with California Prison Focus, which is an inmate advocacy organization. Mr. Carbone, thanks for joining us as well.
Good morning, David. Good morning, Michael, to you as well.
Mr. Carbone, why don't you drill down a bit further, if you would, on what you see as being the key demand that the prisoners are putting forward from Pelican Bay?
Well, I want to address just real briefly the comments by the spokesperson for the Department of Corrections, because there was a comment that Pelican Bay and the other SHU institutions, it's not just Pelican Bay, there are three of these supermax prisons in the state of California, and in fact, some of the high-security prisons in our state have the functional equivalent of the security housing units as well. They call them Z units at High Desert State Prison, and in other prisons they're called administrative segregation units. So we have supermax prisons or their equivalents peppered throughout our state. And this is part and parcel of really a nationwide trend of an unprecedented experiment that never practiced before in the course of human history. We have about 70,000 or nearly 70,000 people in the United States living in these supermax prisons. So when the spokesperson for the department says, well, Pelican Bay or other SHU units, other high-security units, have been subject to great public scrutiny, with all due respect, it's just a lie. The best example is the journalists. If you're a journalist and you want to go inside the prisons, because obviously the members of the public, unless you have a family member there, you'd have no reason to go in and inspect these institutions. As a journalist, you can't go into the prison without the express permission of the department, nor can you ask to interview specific prisoners. The department tells you who you're going to sit down with in a very sanitized tour of these high security units. So it's just
I understand your point, Mr. Carbone, but if you could, I mean, does that speak at all to one of the demands? Is it for greater scrutiny?
Well,
just speak if you would to what it is the prisoners most want.
Scrutiny, because if the public knew what was going on at these institutions at great expense, it's about $57,000 a year to house an inmate in a security housing unit. That's more than sending our children to Stanford. And, if the entire purpose in all of this is public safety is not being served here. I mean, the best example is the need to reduce recidivism in the state is great. The United States Supreme Court just told the state of California to reduce its population by 30,000 because of rampant overcrowding. And yet in the security housing unit, the department is guaranteeing that those prisoners are going to return if they're the lucky ones that will be able to get out, because there is no rehabilitation inside for those particular inmates. There's no vocational programs. There's no educational programs. There's no self-help. And in fact, it pierces the fallacy of the department that these individuals are the worst of the worst for two simple reasons. One of the critical demands is the prisoners want self-help programs. They want access to educational programs. So if these men inside prison were just hardcore gang members, one, and you know they only were interested in engaging in violent activity, one, they wouldn't be practicing the Gandhian philosophy of nonviolent civil disobedience, of engaging in a hunger strike to advance their cause. They would have, you know, attacked guards or done something violent, or, you know, they wouldn't have the understanding to engage in nonviolent civil disobedience. And number
two, let me just hold you there, if I might, for a moment and turn back to Michael Montgomery and ask you, if you would, Michael, to come back to the point you were describing before we heard from Terry Thornton about how it is that people wind up in these security housing units, because that's part of what's key here, right, is the way in which the determination takes place. And then, as you were describing, the fact that determination can last an indefinite amount of time.
Right. This is an issue that has long festered in the department. There has been litigation on this. And in fact, the department lost a case 2 years ago of an inmate who claimed he was falsely or incorrectly sent to the security housing unit because he wasn't a member of any gang. And when the court really looked closely at it, they determined that indeed the man did not belong in the security housing unit. And here's an important point, and this is what prisoners complain about, is once you are validated as a prison gang member, and you don't have to actually do anything, you have to be affiliated with the gang, and the department has to have evidence, you are placed in the security housing unit. If you are not a gang member, and the department says the only way to get out of the security housing unit is to leave the gang, you're in very much a catch-22 situation. So one of the issues is that the inmates are saying no, what they call collective punishment. Do not lock men in the security housing unit merely for what the department claims is gang affiliation. Lock people down for doing something, committing some specific act. And in fact, some of the department's own experts who have looked at this agree with that point, that it should be a behavior-based policy. The department has rejected those proposals so far. The other issue, as Charles was talking about, applies to the conditions within the security housing unit. One of the problems is the security housing unit was built, in a sense, in a different era when rehabilitation wasn't even in the mission of the Department of Corrections. The problem is there's no areas for group programming. These are individual pods, if you will. So it's actually difficult to bring in programming of that kind into the security housing unit. And in fact, just a few months ago, the department made it very clear to me that would be a very, very low priority given the tight budget situation that the department is in.
And Michael, place, if you would, this dispute within the broader dispute that both Mr. Carbone and Ms. Thornton mentioned, that there is this ongoing, as we all know, dispute over how prisons work within the state of California, the recent Supreme Court decision ordering a further reduction in the number of inmates, the whole question about health care and so forth. Given all that's going on with this and the long-term work that everyone agrees needs to be done in terms of prison reform, is it possible to make specific changes in this situation given everything else that's going on?
I think it's unlikely that there would be major changes. Yes, perhaps there could be some increase in programming, individual programming that is done through the closed-circuit television system. Most inmates in security housing unit do have televisions. But any broader reforms, I mean, I think it's very unlikely given the budget climate, and I don't think there's much of an appetite. The department had a set of proposals several years ago from their own experts to address some of these issues, and those recommendations were shelved. So I don't think in the context of a hunger strike by inmates, that the department is going to go forward with any major reforms. I want to point out one other thing that the spokesperson said. She talked about inmates and other institutions showing solidarity with the strikers, even sort of following, you know, their orders. That in itself could be used by the department as evidence of being affiliated with a gang. And that could be one piece of evidence the department, in theory, could use to lock an inmate in the security housing unit.
Interesting point. Charles Carbone, give us some sense of how hardcore, I guess, the prisoners who are participating in the strike are willing to be. One inmate was quoted through his attorney as saying they're committed to taking this all the way to death if necessary. How serious is that intent in your estimation, given, as Michael was suggesting, that it's not likely that any changes are going to happen that are clearly responsive to what their specific demands are?
I think they're deadly serious, unfortunately. I think the prisoners feel, rightly or wrongly, as if they have absolutely nothing to lose in all of this. And I think they have, as Michael pointed out, some of these men have been in isolation for decades now. And so consequently, they've seen the department feign reforms, and they've seen legislative hearings even at one time. They've seen, you know, whole bunches of lawyers and activists and so forth go up and visit them and try to collaborate in the past about getting some of these reforms implemented. And none of those have borne any fruit. And so consequently, I think they feel that somehow this is their opportunity to empower themselves so that they are a stakeholder in all of this that is being heard. And so consequently, I hope we don't get to the point in time, but I wouldn't be surprised, quite frankly, if we are negotiating with the department in the context of a few people having died. That's how serious this is to the men. And there will be a thorny legal question that the department will have to wrestle with, which is whether or not to force feed these men. Some men have said, I'm not willing to be force fed. And then the question becomes, does the department have an obligation, a moral and a legal one, to go to a judge at that point and get an order force feeding some of these men?
Charles Carbone, who is an attorney representing California Prison Focus. And lastly, just a last thought from you, Michael Montgomery, about the gang connection here, which the department says is responsible for the spread of the strike. To what degree is that front and center in all of this debate about the role of gangs within California prisons?
Well, there's no doubt that prison gangs exert enormous influence in the system. Absolutely. I have spoken to many current and former gang members, some of whom were able to continue to operate from within the security housing unit, getting messages out, controlling drug deals and ordering murders on the streets. It's disturbing. And some of these men are extremely dangerous. And I think, the department's argument is that the men are in there to protect public safety. The question, there's two questions, though. Has the department's current policy succeeded in protecting public safety and in stopping these gang members? And then B, are indeed all the men in the security housing unit truly dangerous gang members who are continuing, lives of crime?
And briefly, Michael, what will you be watching for next? Is there something that you expect that will come forward next from the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitations?
There are discussions going on between the department and some groups representing inmates or inmate rights groups. That would be one possibility to diffuse the situation. It's always possible that legislators might get involved. Just to remind us that there was a hunger strike 10 years ago. That ended after about 11 days. So it's possible to diffuse it, but we will just have to see.
Michael Montgomery covering this story for KQED Radio News and California Watch. He joined us along with Charles Carbone, an attorney with the California Prison Focus Organization, an inmate advocacy group. Earlier, we also heard from Terry Thornton, spokesperson for the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. We'll continue to follow this story both on Forum and on KQED News. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson.